in here. It's not out there. It's only that those things out there provide the happiness that exists in my mind. But some of them do and some of them don't. And only one person can make that determination, and that is me. Do I get the happiness from these things or don't I? If I do, I like them. If I get a lot of happiness, I cherish them. Now, there is an area where I can get help. Help in understanding some of the ramifications and consequences. There may be something that can provide happiness to me, and the judge, my mind, says, yes, I derive happiness from that. But information and knowledge might lead me to know that the happiness I'm getting is going to exact a great cost in the future. So there is information that others might bring to me that I can weigh to determine that the price of this particular happiness is too great, and so I won't take it. A drug, for example, might produce a great sense of euphoria in me, and I might say, well, I'm the only judge. I know that I'm getting happiness. Well, that answer is total and complete and correct. I am getting happiness from it. But there is a further question to be answered, and that is, what is the price I'll have to pay for this tomorrow? Maybe the price will be so great that the little bit of happiness I'll get from the moment isn't worth it. And if it isn't, then of course, despite the fact it brought happiness to me, I will take these other things into consideration. And the question then will always resolve itself to, what is the greatest amount of happiness I can acquire over the period of time I expect to live, and in terms of what is possible in my life? Now, the individual will feel many, many times, if he is overly concerned about reality, that the whole world is against him. Would you believe that this evening, when I walked down to my car in the garage to get into my car and drive down here to give this lecture, that I discovered the fact that my tape recorder and my briefcase with all the records of this course, the text of tonight's lecture and everything else had been stolen. And I got here and I find out that we're in a room next door to an orchestra. And if I ever get my hands on my fellow, I'll bring it to that. No, but of course it's not relevant. But did you ever have one of those days when... But at any rate, I'm sure the police will take care of everything. Yeah, exactly. And I thought I had put him away for good. I assumed my car was locked. The funny thing about it was I was only gone for 2 hours, which was a lesson in something, and I'm still trying to figure out what it was. But it was in my own garage, and I had only gone upstairs for a couple of hours, and it wasn't even overnight, and I would never leave my car unlocked for obvious reasons that I think I've been saying off and on throughout the course. But it may have been that I did leave it unlocked inadvertently without realizing it, but it wouldn't matter because the car is capable of being unlocked. It's one of these hard tops without the post in the center, which I have unlocked many times without the key when I have left my key inside of it or something. So it's possible, and there's nothing to do but to recognize that this possibility exists. And the question then is, do you get another kind of car that is more foolproof? Do you get another form of protection, or would that be too expensive compared with the risk that you're taking and allowing it to be vulnerable to be stolen? Once having made the decision, there's no way you can go back on it. There's no way you can reverse it. All you do then is lay down and cry. Thank you.